Sleep is incredibly important. We can't live without it. We know it's good for us, but we don't necessarily know how to get the best quality sleep. And it's very easy to neglect it and prioritize other things.
I assumed mistakenly that sleep is a biological constant. It's not. It varies by time and space, oftentimes to a remarkable degree.
Sleep. Wonderful when it happens, frustrating when it's elusive. And getting enough of it, well, seems to be a perpetual problem in our modern lives. But whatever it is, sleep is never boring. I'm Chris Chambers, and this is The Art of Sleep, an original podcast series by Rituals. We'll be taking you deep into the world of sleep and everything that's connected to it, from body clocks to the perfect bedroom and the science of rest. We'll learn how to get the most out of the time you spend in bed. Sleeping, of course, that is. Well, joining me in the studio is Dagmar Brusser, who's the creative director at Rituals, and she'll be joining me throughout the series while we unravel the art of sleep. Welcome, Dagmar. How did you sleep last night?
Actually, I slept really well. Might have been a little longer.
In this specific episode, we're going to be sort of looking at how sleep actually works. Have we always slept the same way as we do now? But of course, we have to ask ourselves as well, how we sleep, is it connected to how we spend our day?
I once read that the quality of your day reflects the quality of your sleep. So if you have a very stressful, busy day and you don't get to unwind and you don't get to sort of unload your brain, then your brain will sort of carry on while you sleep. You wake up exhausted or you don't get to sleep at all.
But do you have that yourself? I mean, you're the creative director of Rituals, which I would imagine is quite a stressful job. It's, of course, a fun job, but, you know, you work hard. Are you able to unwind at the end of a busy day?
Yeah, I think I do. Probably also because I have specific routines. You know, I always try to read a few pages before I go to bed.
Well, we spend an average of 36% of our lives doing it, but sleep tends to come very low down on our priority list. The mantra these days is that sleep is overrated. There's far less research in this field than, say, nutrition or exercise. Not only is how sleep works a bit elusive, it's also given a bad rap. We tend to view slumber as a waste of time when we could be doing something productive. Or, at the very least, we see it as a necessary evil. But maybe we shouldn't be looking at sleep that way at all.
A good night's sleep starts the first thing in the morning. My name is Sophie Bostock, and I'm a sleep evangelist. So I spend my days educating people about the science of sleep and trying to convince them that it's very important.
Dr. Sophie Bostock has done a lot of scientific research in the field of sleep, and she's the founder of thesleepscientist.com. It's a website that makes the science of sleep accessible to everyone. But she didn't become a sleep evangelist out of the blue.
It wasn't until I had quite a serious accident while I was climbing when I made some very silly, risky decisions after a night of not very much sleep. It really made me think twice about how important sleep is. I went climbing on the back of probably 4 hours of sleep. So by the time it got to 5 p.m, I underestimated my level of exhaustion. I smashed up my ankle pretty badly. So then I had several months where I wasn't able to walk. I had a little bit of time off work, and I really had a chance to reflect and to sleep a lot. And I realized that probably for about the previous 5 years of working for a startup, I'd been sleep deprived. I started to feel much more creative. I had a lot more energy. Sleep is incredibly important. We can't live without it. Most people don't actually know what controls our sleep. And a lot of the science about the importance of sleep and the impact if you don't get enough has actually been published in the last 30 years. We know it's good for us, but we don't necessarily know how to get the best quality sleep. And it's very easy to neglect it and prioritize other things. I'll always try and get up at the same time every day. I have a dawn simulation alarm clock, which actually wakes me up with light so that even in the depths of winter, I use light to help me feel alert first thing in the morning. If I have time, I'll try and get outside, go for a walk, do something active. But I think the most important thing is that hour before bed, protecting time to wind down. So making sure that I've switched off technology, particularly my phone, and I've got everything ready for the next day. You know, my clothes are out, my lunch is ready, my room is tidy, so that I feel psychologically ready to end the day.
Sleep is important for every single aspect of our physical and emotional health. But what's actually happening in our bodies when we sleep?
So the first stage of sleep is stage one, which is a light sleep. It's kind of the transition between sleeping and waking. And you're just starting to lose your conscious awareness. Things start to slow down, heart rate, breathing rate. And it's very easy to wake somebody up from stage one sleep. But for most people, after 5 to 10 minutes, they then start to dip into stage two sleep. Stage two sleep is where your heart rate slows further, your breathing rate slows, your temperature starts to drop. And this is where memories probably start to become consolidated. But it's not until stage three sleep, or deep sleep, which is associated with much slower brainwave activity, when really some of the physically restorative power of sleep comes in. So this is when we think that growth hormone is produced, for example, and also incredibly important for consolidating memory. So what actually happens? You go from stage one sleep to stage two sleep, then if you're lucky, you get a good chunk of deep sleep, and then you come back, you cycle through a much lighter phase of sleep called REM sleep, or rapid eye movement sleep, which is usually associated with dreaming. And then often there's a short period of wakefulness before the cycle begins again. So you might have 3 to 5 cycles of sleep during the night.
But aside from its physical benefits, sleep is also good for our brains and mental well-being.
Sleep is essential for both learning and memory. It frees up more space in your short-term memory capacity and enables you to actually kind of move memories from your short-term memory banks in the hippocampus in the center of the brain and out into the cortex, the big kind of memory storage area. So you're actually becoming more selective in your memory and reinforcing the things that are particularly important to you. And sleep is really efficient at recalling emotionally salient memory. So stuff that you felt was really important during the day is more likely to get consolidated at night. And some recent research actually showed that during deep sleep in particular, what happens is there's less blood flow to the brain, and that allows space for more of this fluid to circulate and actually wash out harmful toxins. So there does seem to be this real cleansing function associated particularly with deep sleep. Sleep and mental health are absolutely intrinsically linked. If you're sleeping well, you are going to feel more positive. Whereas if your sleep is poor, you are more likely to suffer from anxiety, from depression, and various mental health disorders. So one of the fastest ways to improve your mood is actually to focus on your sleep.
So you need it, but how much of it do you need? Dagmar, I'll ask you that question. How many hours sleep, roughly, do you have each night?
I think on average it will be 6 to 7 hours.
What time do you go to bed?
1.
Oh, that's late. So what time do you normally get up?
I set the alarm early because I like to snooze a little. I don't know if I sleep well from, you know, a biological standpoint, because I'm, you know, maybe sleeping too short.
Okay, so how much of it do you actually need? Let's ask Sophie Bostock.
On average, most adults need 7 to 9 hours sleep to function at their best. But there will always be the people on the extremes who actually function perfectly well on less sleep. The real clue is in how you feel during the day. If you feel like you're perfectly alert, energized through the day without relying on caffeine, without relying on sugar to pep you up, then the chances are that you are getting enough sleep. And it's important not to compare yourself to other people. You know, go to sleep when you feel sleepy. That's one of the kind of golden rules of sleep.
So 7 to 9 hours in one go seems sensible. But up until a couple of centuries ago, we used to sleep quite differently. Roger Ekirch is a professor of history at Virginia Tech University. And while researching a historical book on nighttime, he stumbled upon some information that he originally thought would be, and forgive the pun, a bit of a snooze.
I dreaded having to address the issue of sleep. I thought it would be boring. I assumed mistakenly that sleep is a biological constant. It's not. It varies by time and space, oftentimes to a remarkable degree.
The history of sleep is actually fascinating, and it helps us understand why we sleep the way we do today. When Roger was trawling through library archives, he found evidence that until the Industrial Revolution, we used to have a first and a second sleep.
It slowly became clear to me that this was a pattern of sleep with which I was totally unfamiliar. Most individuals, including children, did experience this broken pattern of sleep, for which there are innumerable references, with the earliest dating to Homer's Odyssey. Virgil's Aeneid has a wonderful verse describing this segmented pattern of sleep.
Roger also found some evidence that strongly suggests segmented sleep was normal before Homer wrote the Odyssey nearly 3,000 years ago. So it goes a long, long way back.
Segmented sleep was the dominant pattern of human slumber in the Western world, arguably from time immemorial until the mid to late 19th century and the Industrial Revolution. Typically, an individual might go to bed between 9 and 10 p.m., and then they would awaken roughly after 3 and a half hours, sometimes shortly past midnight, whereupon they would remain awake, conscious, sometimes leave their beds for up to an hour or so, until they then returned and took their second sleep, roughly the same length of time, 3 and a half hours, as the initial interval of slumber. They did practically anything and everything imaginable during that interval of wakefulness. Some people never left their beds. They prayed, they reflected on dreams, which were often thought divine in inspiration, and they made love. Numbers also left their beds. To perform a chore that did not require much artificial illumination or skill, some visited a neighbor, some probably more likely pilfered from a neighbor's woodpile or apple orchard. This was a prime time for the commission of petty crime.
Well, some things never change, though it appears that somehow our sleep patterns did. Very few societies practice segmented sleep nowadays. So what actually happened?
values with regard to sleep changed dramatically over the course of the 19th century. With the Industrial Revolution, productivity, profit-making became much more important than they had ever been. Sleep increasingly was viewed as a necessary evil. People became, especially the middle classes and those above them, increasingly time conscious. So that taking a second sleep was not only thought harmful to one's health by the mid-19th century, it was also thought to be literally counterproductive, literally a waste.
But there was another major reason why our sleep patterns changed from segmented to a single continuous block.
And that is the increasing prevalence of artificial illumination. Artificial illumination, sleep physicians are virtually unanimous in agreeing, has a very important impact upon one's human body clock, your circadian rhythms. None more important than the sleep-wake cycle. Every time we turn on a light switch, it's as if we are taking a dose of medicine that will affect our sleep. Artificial illumination, not only in the form of street lamps, but also domestic lighting, encourage people to go to bed later. Their degree of exhaustion became greater, and they were much more likely, when they finally did go to bed at 11 p.m. or 12 rather than 9 or 10, as their ancestors had, much more likely to fall asleep more rapidly and to fall into a deeper sleep, in which the quality of their sleep actually improved and their sleep also became increasingly compressed, no longer broken into two segments.
These days, we tend to think that sleeping in a single block at night is better. But there is some scientific evidence to suggest that biphasic or segmented sleeping is actually more natural.
Historical research has shown that sleeping continuously throughout the night is not necessarily the norm. People should not panic. They should not be frustrated if they find themselves waking up. As many sleep physicians have told me, as well as their patients, is that when they wake up in the middle of the night, if they are informed that this historically was the predominant pattern of sleep, that lessens their anxiety and oftentimes enables them to fall back to sleep more quickly. A newspaper columnist in Australia for one of the major papers wrote a column about her insomnia. And she described how she tried every possible remedy to ease this, what for her was a very frustrating affliction. She then added simply, "I finally found a solution. History."
Most sleep scientists agree that biphasic sleeping doesn't fit with our current lifestyles. Sophie says that, in general, we should just relax a bit more when it comes to worrying about our sleep.
A lot of people with insomnia, what actually perpetuates that insomnia is the anxiety about not being able to sleep. If you've been in bed and you can't sleep, you haven't slept for maybe 15 to 20 minutes, get up, get out of bed, do something else, preferably in kind of dim light so you're not over arousing yourself, but only get back into bed when you feel sleepy tired. When I try and convince people to get more sleep, I will always ask them what is most important to them. If it's their family, then I'll explain the links between your ability to have rich and warm relationships with people and your sleep. You're super irritable and you're unable to focus on other people. That's going to impact on your relationships. And we know that you're actually more likely to get into conflict, particularly if both members of a couple are sleep deprived, they are more likely to argue. Whatever it is that's most important to you, sleep will help you to achieve your goals.
But good sleep is not just about getting to bed on time.
If you can get up at the same time every day, that helps your body clock because it helps it to anticipate when you're going to wake up and when you're going to feel sleepy. The more tired you are, the more likely you are to neglect your bedtime. So sometimes you have to help yourself out. You've got to set an alarm on your phone and go, right, okay, do you know what? Come 9:30, 10 o'clock, that's my wind down time. And I'm going to protect that last hour of the day to make sure that I get into bed at a time which is going to allow me to have 7 to 9 hours of sleep. So having a routine is probably the single most important thing that you can do to help your sleep. It's about having a feeling of safety and security when you go to bed that helps you have a restful night of sleep.
Okay, Dagmar, well, we're coming towards the end of this episode now, but there's some fascinating stuff there. The end, when she's talking about, you just shouldn't worry. I mean, if you wake up 2-3 times in the night, just, you know, hey, relax about it. It's not a problem. What do you think about that?
I totally agree. Let's go. I think it's the stress, you know, if you can let go of that stress. And if you can't sleep, get up. And then at some point you probably will feel a little sleepy again, and then it might be easier.
Don't worry about it. And then you're almost certainly going to get back to bed, hopefully, and then fall into a nice deep sleep again. Yes, so routine, it's very important to our circadian rhythms or body clocks. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about in the next episode, how the body decides when it's time to wake and when it's time to sleep.
What is clear from the science is that we've adapted to sleep at night when it's dark. So our internal circadian rhythm is favourable for sleep at night. And this is our internal body clock. It's kind of written into our DNA for us to be active and inactive on a 24-hour cycle, which is tuned to daylight. So daylight is probably the strongest regulator of our body clocks, telling us when to feel alert and when to feel sleepy.
You know those annoying chipper morning people? Well, they just can't help it. All will be explained next time. Thanks for listening to The Art of Sleep, an original podcast brought to you by Rituals. Learn more about how sleep and relaxing enriches your day at rituals.com/podcast. I'm Chris Chambers. Thanks for listening.